Basement headquarters. This is Evolution.org Raw Podcast.
We got your host Steve Smee and the Mason, where we come to you straight with our Q&A. No bullshit, just raw, hardcore, uncensored.
You smoke hashish?
I am black. A what?
You smoke hashish?
No, I don't do drugs, sir.
You said you smoke hashish. Where can I get the hashish?
That's okay, man. I'll pass. Thank you.
Where can I get the hashish? Can you send me some hashish?
Hey, what's up, guys? You got that hashish up there in Canada, Matt? I heard it goes
really good. Get off the drugs, kids. Get off the drugs.
It grows good up there in the... that lush soil that you guys have up there in Canada. So we got a great show, guys. We got a Q&A episode, and we have a lot of topics to get into. The first one we'd like to hit is relationships. So Matt, what's a relationship topic that you have on your mind?
Okay, here's the thing. Just to warn everybody and to give you a heads up, we don't discuss these topics beforehand. We're not your regular podcast where we talk for an hour and get prepared. We just talk about the shit we get emailed. So I got a couple good ones today that I think are a little bit shocking, but I want to start off with a more normal relationship topic. And I'll go with this one because I have experience kind of with this subject with friends. And what this one says is, this was an email, says, my wife is always yelling at our kids. How do I discuss parenting with her? And the reason why I wanted to hit this one is because this is a really tough subject. When you talk about parenting, you don't want to offend your husband or wife or partner, but clearly if they're doing something that's kind of out of line, you have to say it. You know, you really got to protect the kids. So it's really tricky. But friends of ours were in this situation where the wife, the mother, was always yelling at the kids and it was causing an issue. And what I've learned is the best way to talk about this is to tell her that you don't want the kids to be scared of you. And that will mean a lot to a mother. Because they always want best for the kids. They always want the kids to, you know, they want them to be able to come talk to mommy when there's a problem. Tell me how everything's going at school. Tell me about your boyfriends, girlfriends. You know, you don't want that communication not there. So what I suggest is tell her that, you know, that you don't want the kids to grow up being scared of you so that there's going to be no communication. It's going to cut the relationship off. They're not going to have their mom to go and talk to about this stuff. They're going to go to dad instead because dad's not confrontational. So it takes a lot of work, obviously. Kids are very stressful. I know they can cause you to get to your boiling point really quick. So it does take practice and telling yourself, you know, calm down. There's no need to yell. Let's deal with it. You know, let's talk first. But it's extremely important to do that because you really don't want your kids to not want to talk to you. You know, the most important thing is to have the communication with your kids because they're going to go through the same shit that you did. They're going to do the same stupid things you did. They're going to drink underage and they're going to need to call somebody for a ride. And you want them to be able to reach out to you and say, hey, mom, hey, dad, I screwed up. I need your help. But if they grow up and they're scared of you, they're never going to do that. And they could end up getting into trouble because of it. Steve, I know you don't have any kids, but I know you got friends that do, and you know a lot of people with families. What advice would you give to somebody where, you know, one of the parents is kind of just, you know, the disciplinarian, they're always yelling?
Well, Matt, I don't have kids, but you know what? You know, I'm not a pilot either. I'm not a helicopter pilot. But if I was driving down the road and I saw a helicopter in the fucking tree, I don't have to be a helicopter pilot to know somebody fucked up. So there's a lot of fuck-ups out there for sure. A lot of these fucking kids are a disaster. So I don't really know. I've been in a situation before where I was dating a girl. She brought up the topic of spanking. This is how I can kind of relate to your question. It's kind of off topic, but it kind of relates to it. And she got in this, she freaked out over it. She's like, I can't believe you don't believe in spanking, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to spank my kids, blah, blah, blah. It's like, whoa, whoa. I'm like, girl, relax. This is like our fourth date, you know? So it's definitely something you should, you know, kind of talk over, I think, before you get into a relationship. But I think, too, a lot of this is instinct. You know, you get a kid and, you know, the instinct kind of kicks in and you start, you know, learning this stuff as you go. So it's one of those things where I wonder, though, if it's like an instinctual thing. So it's a topic. It's definitely a complicated topic. So let's move on to the next one. It's a totally different, we're going more backwards on this one, but we're going to dating. And it's like, what are some signals that women give us for like hints? And this is an example of a hint. Let's say you're out with a girl and you go pick her up for the date and you go out and she's like, I have to be back by so-and-so time because I have to do whatever. That's pretty much her telling you that you're not getting late. All right. She basically wants to go out with you on a date and have you take her home, but you're not getting late. It's probably too early. You know, she's not ready to have sex with you yet, blah, blah, blah. The flip side of it is if she invites you over to her place, or she's like, you know, hey, why don't I come over to your place? And let's say you're on, you know, your third, fourth, fifth date and that happens. That's a signal that, yeah, you're going to get laid. So basically, you want to, you know, pack a lunch, all right, and be ready for that. So kind of get the don't work out, you know, your legs early in the day, because I've done that before. I worked out legs in the in the morning. Then I was going to her house in the afternoon. I got to her house, we're banging, and I'm like, you know, it's like 30 minutes into it. I'm like, you know, my legs are getting tired. And I'm like, look, I worked out this morning, my legs, I was squatting like 400 or 500 pounds, and she got pissed at me. She's like, you knew we were going to have sex today. You knew it. I invited you over. It's like, dude, really? You know, stop being a fucking idiot, you know? So these are little hints that women give you when it comes to that stuff. So if the girl's like, hey, you know, I got to do this later, blah, 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 don't fucking force the issue and don't force your way in her house and be like, yeah, you know, let me come in, blah, blah, blah. No, she's pretty much saying she's not ready to have sex with you. And on the flip side, if she invites you in after the date, then yeah, she wants you to make a move on her. So, you know, it's one of those things where these are signals that women give to guys. And a lot of women complain that guys are stupid, because we are stupid. But if you get good at dating, you will be able to recognize these types of signals. So Matt, you're married. What are some signals that your wife gives you that pretty much tell you you're not getting laid or you are getting laid?
Here's the thing. You just nailed it. We are stupid. So you got to pay attention, because out of all the signals, we're only capable of probably picking up 40% of them. So you better be on your game, or else you're only going to pick up 20%, and then you're going to be in a lot of trouble. But it's different now, you know, like, for me, as Steve said, I've been married a long time. If you're, you know, in the dating world, body language is huge. So things like smiling. If you notice you're out on a date and she's smiling a lot at you, that's a really good thing. You know, that's really positive. On the other hand, if she's distracted, she's on her phone, you know, if she's not really looking you in the eye when you're talking, she's not really engaged in the conversation, then you know it's probably not going well. You know, so a lot of things with body language, if you just pay attention, you can pick up on it. For me, it's the easy ones. You know, it's such the typical, if I get the I'm tired, I know where that's going and I know it's over. Or it's funny how all the time girls don't feel good. I don't feel well. My stomach's bugging me today. I got a headache. When those things come up, that means nothing other than it's not happening tonight. Do not try because you're just going to piss me off. So those are kind of the signals. It depends if you guys go to bed at the same time. If you don't and you come in after and she pretends to be sleeping and you know she's up still, probably not going to happen for you too. On the other side of it, there's also, you know, non-sex things like, you know, hey, the kitchen's trashed. Probably means you should help out and pitch in because she doesn't want to do it all herself, or she's getting pissed off because you're sitting on the couch and there's a mess to take care of. So honestly, more times than not, it's just about listening. That's what I find. So I got a couple of good ones here. Let's go with this one's really interesting. So this guy, he's dating a girl. They've only been dating a few months. And he wants to know, how does he bring it up to her that he has a pee fetish? So I told you we had some pretty good questions today. Now, if I take a step back, what are we talking about here? We're talking about just something that's not typical. You know, it's just something that not everybody does or has. That's fine. So to me, all you're talking about here is, how do I tell her something that isn't the norm? And you know what? That's more and more common now. Not everybody grows up just the typical person wanting the two kids and the house and the dog and everything else. You know, people are different. So how do you bring it up? There's probably not a great way, because you're never going to be to the point that you're that comfortable when you're early on in a relationship. So I guess I can kind of only think of a couple. The first example would be, maybe you guys have had a couple drinks and the truth serum kicks in and you kind of just say it because you're not too worried about it. Or the other option is, maybe it comes up kind of in joking, like maybe talking about, oh, you know, there's all this porn out there and then, you know, this and that. And then you can kind of gauge the reaction to see where her head's at around it. But I don't know. I've never had to do that myself, have like a specific discussion about, hey, I'm into this. Do you want to pee on me? Never personally had that. So I don't know how I would go about it, but Steve, can you help me out here? Bail me out on some good advice for this guy?
I think this guy's listening to that rapper who used to pee on women or something.
Oh, that was R. Kelly.
Yeah, R. Kelly. I think he learned that from that. Or he's been watching too much porn. So that's the thing, when you watch so much porn is you develop these crazy ass fetishes. Like, you start getting into like really, really weird shit. And, like, it's weird, like, but hey, you know, I'm not really sure. I'm kind of speechless on this one, but look, everyone has their own fetishes. So, have you ever been in a situation where, you know, you've been dating a girl and she asks you, she's like, you know, the sex is good, everything's going good. And she kind of pops that question to you of, you know, hey, you know, we should try this, or what would you like to try? Then that's an example of something that you can do. So if you're in a type of, if you're dating someone like that and you have that type of conservative relationship, that would be an avenue to use it. But there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they get into the dating apps and they get into the fast world of dating. So there's all kind of fetishes out there that you can talk to the person with online and then see if they're into it. Then you can kind of get into it. But like, you know, it's it's kind of, I don't know, it's weird. I've dated a lot of women in my life, and I've had a lot of weird things said. I've had women that are like, you know, I like pain. I like only anal. You know, it's just, it's weird. A lot of people are into weird shit out there. It's a crazy ass world. So, just, you got to come to an agreement on what you want to do, but there's people into weird shit out there. So if you're into weird shit, you will find a match for that. It's just, you got to look for it. So Matt, do you have another one really quick? Cause we're deep into this podcast, or do you want to move on?
Yeah, we can just do this one quick. He didn't really have a question. It was an extremely long email, so I'm not going to read it. But the gist of it is, he was born, it's a guy, born with a micro penis. And he just kind of told his story of how he'll never experience, you know, what a regular dude will, you know, being able to penetrate a woman. So I thought, you know what, like, I kind of felt bad for the guy, like, for writing us this whole thing. But I thought, you know what, why not bring it up and give him some advice? You know, there's nothing you can do. You're born how you are. It's the same thing as race, things like that. You're born what you are. So you have to accept it, and you have to love yourself, first of all. You know what? Find things that make you feel good about yourself. It's going to be about confidence for this guy, right? It's going to be about, you know, what's going to make you feel good. Hey, if you want to look good, you know, this is the podcast to listen to, right? Obviously, the guy works out if he's listening to this. Get into the gym. Get big. You know, get into great shape. Get ripped. Do that kind of stuff to make yourself feel good. If that's not going to do it, find something that is. Compete in something. You know, dedicate yourself to, I'm going to run. I'm going to be a runner. I'm going to do a half marathon. I'm going to do a full marathon. Whatever you want to do, I think this guy's life is going to be about finding things that make him feel good about himself. Because we all have that thing, you know, or more than one thing that we don't like about ourselves. You know, for this guy, it happens to be his dick is small, really small, you know, and unfortunately, he's going to have to live with that. But, you know, we hate to admit it as guys, there's a lot more to life than just sex. And kind of what Steve just said about the whole fetish thing, you know, there's somebody out there for everybody. And if he's a good dude, if he's loyal, if he's honest, you know, if he's got interests in things, if he's, you know, seems like a fun guy and that's his only thing, there's somebody out there that would be more than happy to have that. So, you know, that was kind of the story. Steve, any advice for this guy on
how to go? Look, there's plenty of ways to satisfy a woman, like sexually, besides intercourse. And a lot of women say that men can't satisfy them with intercourse anyway. So if you know, learn other ways, you know, fingering, oral, using toys, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there are other ways you can do it. So you're not going to be able to do it with your dick. That's for sure. And a lot of women are going to see your dick and break up with you. So learn to deal with that. We all have something, like Matt said. So I've gone out with girls and they're like, oh, you know, they're like, wow, you know, Steve, you're a great guy, but you're only 5'6". You're only 5'7". I want a guy who's 6 foot tall. Oh, well, you know, nothing I can do about it, you know. So that's just how it goes. But you're going to find a girl who doesn't give a fuck about your height, or doesn't give a fuck about your dick size, doesn't give a fuck about, you know, your looks. You know, you're born that way. Some guys are ugly as fuck. Some guys are fucking, you know, like Brad Pitt. That's just how it goes. So you can only control what you can control. So it's not that big a deal. If a girl rejects you over something that you can't control, that's fine. You'll find someone who won't. So, you know, just accept the way it is. But yeah, that does really suck. I'm not really sure if there's any medical solutions to a micro penis. You'll have to maybe look into it. You know, I'm not really sure. But, you know, that really, really sucks. So let's get into some steroid topics, you know. Here's one. And he's asking about the prior podcast. He says that we mentioned you mentioned that Trent screwed you up in the past. If you could do it again with Trent, what would you do different?
And how can I counteract what you went through if I do a trend cycle? So Matt, you ran trend as well. Let me answer this first. Basically, in the last podcast, I talked a little bit about this. Basically, I felt like in a 2-year span, I ran trend in about 8-week cycles, maybe 4 or 5 cycles of trend in those 2-3 years. And I felt like during those 2-3 years, I was really, really big, okay, for my bone structure, for my height. I was a big guy. I was a strong guy, okay? And I felt like I was overworking myself because that trend was allowing me to lift extremely, extremely heavy weight. I mean, I was benching over 400 pounds raw. I'd be sitting there in the gym. You know, I've had like 3 plates on each side with like another 10 pounds and another 5 pounds just sitting there. And this guy one time, he's like, dude, do you need a spot? And I'm like, no, I don't need a spot, but thank you. And he's like looking at me shocked. And he's like, I mean, you don't look like you need a spot, but, you know, that's a lot of weight. And he's like, have you always been that strong? And I'm like, no, I haven't always been that strong. I've been lifting weights for 20, you know, over 20 years, you know. So, but, and then I went and did it for reps, and he's just like blown away that I'm that strong. But it's a combination of lifting weights for years and trend. Trend really takes you to another level. But in the process, and this is what I talked about on the last podcast, I ended up tearing my rotator cuff. Because you're benching so much, you're doing so much militaries, you're squatting so much, blah, blah, blah. You're putting such a strain on your body that you're causing that type of dysfunction where your body breaks down. So that was why I said I regretted using trend like that. So how can this guy use trend responsibly? I would tell you, do 1 cycle of trend per year and run it at 8 weeks max. That's it. Don't overdo it. And I know you're gonna get very strong on trend. You're gonna get very big on trend. Okay? You'll probably slam all your PRs. Don't get greedy. Okay? Take 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Don't be like, I have to consistently have this trajectory where I'm benching 250 pounds, then I'm benching 275 pounds, then 300, then 325, then 350, then 375, on and on. You have to be willing to get stronger on your lifts and then pull back, okay, when you come off trend. Don't keep cycling it like I did because you'll end up with a shoulder issue. And I will probably never be able to live that heavy again. I can bench now. You know, my rotator cuff feels a lot better. I can still bench, but I'm not going to be able to bench over 400 pounds. And if I did, I'd be at risk of really having a severe tear, which would require me to have surgery, and I'd be out of the gym for many, many months. So I don't want to get to that point. So this is why I say you got to be very conservative and don't get greedy with these steroids. Matt, what was your experience with trend?
So for me, the advice I'm going to give is kind of the exact opposite of what you'll read everywhere. So I don't know if I'm wrong, if everybody else is wrong, or, you know, it's just kind of a mix. And these are the opinions we read. But this is something I actually did right for me and what I recommend to other people. The first time you use trend, I prefer you use the long ester. And what you always read everywhere is you got to use trend ace first. You got to use the short ester because if the side effects get bad, you can drop it and it'll be out of your system a lot quicker. If you run the long ester and you get bad side effects, you got to kind of deal with it for weeks and it's tough. So I get that general idea. But if you're running a proper dose, and by proper, I mean 300 milligrams per week is plenty, you shouldn't get crazy side effects either way. The reason I say to go with the long ester, and again, this is only my personal experience, because it took me time to get any side effects. And when I did, it was basically, you know, being really, really hot at night, sweating, just the difficulty sleeping. That was basically it. Now, I did run Tren Ace my next time after that, running Tren. And I'm telling you, I ran the exact same dose, but it comes on so quick and so hard. You don't get that time. You don't get that grace period where the esters are building up. It's like you just hit a brick wall. So not only did I have the same side effects, but I couldn't get fucking hydrated. My mouth felt like sandpaper all day long. There was nothing I could do to get rid of it. I would be chugging water. All the other side effects you hear, like you get the guys that have the hypo symptoms at night, everything else. Now, could it have been it was overdosed or my long ester was underdosed? Sure, that's a possibility. So that's kind of one thing that I experienced. The other is if you're going to use it that first time to avoid the disaster, make sure you're experienced. And I don't mean you've run two cycles. I mean, wait till way, way, way down the road. It should be the last thing you add in, the last thing you try, because you really need to know a lot about your body. Can you imagine what happened to Steve putting up that much weight? If you did that on your second or third cycle and you blew your shoulder out, now you're fucked, right? Like, you don't want to have that. You want to be, you know, building up and getting that knowledge along the way. So I think the longer you can hold off on it, the better. And the only other thing I'll tell you guys about Tren to avoid kind of the disaster scenario is to understand if you do get the crazy, crazy libido increase, and I did, there's nothing you can do to stop that. There's no way to get rid of it. You're either going to be banging your wife or girlfriend all the time. You're going to be jacking off all the time, whatever the case may be. But it's one of those things that sounds kind of fun, especially for, you know, a guy that's older might think, oh yeah, to go back to my, you know, early 20s. But it is something that, like the rest of the side effects, do get annoying after time. So just understand there's not really anything you can do to stop that. Just be ready for it, especially if you're in a committed relationship. It does affect some of us more than others. And you need to be able to control yourself if you're in that situation. So I would say just be aware of that. So I got a whole bunch of cycle questions here too. This first one I like. It's a great question. And I don't think it's a very long answer required. But he just says, are there any PEDs that cannot be detected? That's an awesome question because I don't think I've heard that before. And Steve, I don't know about you, but my answer is no, not that I'm aware of. There are no ester compounds that can be out of your system in a day. That can be really quick, but I'm not aware of anything that's undetectable. You know, if we're talking about steroids and SARMs kind of in that world, Steve, do you know of anything that, you know, would just sneak through the system?
If you're using Tren No Ester or you're using test suspension, you will pass your drug test because it's going to be in and out of your system the same day. It's completely undetectable. HGH as well should be out of your system within a couple days. So most of the tests, they tell you, okay, you have to go here and get tested. They give you a couple days to go, so you'll be good doing that. So those are the two, you know, things that will work for you. So those would be your two options for sure. So those are probably what they're using in the professionals to get away with it. So, but you know, if you have a job that, you know, something up there, like in the feds or something, be smart because they can give you a lie detector test. If they think you're on something, they'll give you a lie detector test. And if you fail that, they can fire you and stuff. So don't get foolish when it comes to that. So another one is he wants to know, what is a good dosage for DECA? And this is a good question. I'm going to tell you guys this with DECA. The thing with DECA is it binds to DHT receptors. And when that happens, although that's good when it comes to side effects like hair loss, prostate issues, all that stuff, but it's not good when it comes to reducing your DHT because DHT is our sex hormone. So that's why guys get DECA dick when they're running DECA. So I always tell guys to run Proviron with it. But the nice thing about DECA is it's mild. Okay, it aromatizes way less than testosterone. So you can run DECA in a stack, 400, 600 milligrams. And it's mild. It's not going to give you this crazy water retention. And, you know, so that would be a dosage, but it would really come down to what you're stacking it with. So if you're running 500 milligrams of testosterone with DECA, you know, do you really want to run a lot of DECA with it? No, because then you're going to be over a gram of gear. So you want to keep your gear conservative to run it properly. But like I said, the nice thing about DECA is you can get liberal with it and it won't give you these side effects like estrogen and you know, other DHT related issues and androgenic side effects. Have you run DECA, Matt?
Yeah, I actually love it. And so this, I kind of have a quick comment, but I want to follow up with a question too after for you, Steve. So my comment on DECA is it's very typical that guys just run it at, you know, 300-400 milligrams because that's what's repeated over and over and over again. But I'm telling you, you can run it different ways. Like Steve said, it aromatizes less than testosterone. So if you want to run it a little bit higher, you're not really, you know, like at more risk than say if you ran 600 milligrams test like some guys do and then get gyno and then blame the DECA. So there's a bunch of different ways you can run it. I guess I want to get my question in here, Steve. So I am very intrigued by the idea of a TRT dose of test with a higher dose of DECA, say 600 milligrams. And the reason why it intrigues me, not something I would personally do right now, but I think to bulk on that cycle is almost perfect. And you never hear anybody doing it. So a couple of things DECA is known for. One, it makes you feel great. And guys feel great when they're running it at 400 milligrams. So if you run 600 milligrams, you're still going to feel great. It's great with your joints. It's going to make you feel good. Not going to heal them, but you're going to feel good. And the other thing is DECA really can increase your appetite. So if you're trying to add some mass, I think that's the perfect combination. You got something increasing your appetite, something that's going to help you gain mass. You're not going to have crazy water weight because your test is at a TRT level. So is that not almost the perfect bulking cycle? So the other part to the question is, if you were to run, say, DECA at 600, what's a good dose of Proviron for people that are interested? Is it 25 milligrams? Is it 50? Is it some guys running 200? You know, what would be your dose, Steve, that you'd recommend?
The thing is, you want to make sure, first of all, you're getting legit Proviron. Okay, because a lot of sources will sell you D-Bol, you know, and everything, because D-Bol is so fucking cheap to produce. And, you know, so you want to make sure it's legit Proviron, but I think you can get away with 25 milligrams a day, and that would be fine. Always in a DECA cycle. And the nice thing about Proviron is not liver toxic. So you can run it throughout your DECA cycle with no worries about your liver. So, that's actually a good way on your cycle, do blood work and see, is your liver being strained? And that would tell you, wow, this isn't legit Proviron. So that would be a good strategy to do. So that would be my answer to that.
Awesome. I think that'd be a great cycle for some of you guys to try out. And Proviron's another one that makes you feel good. You know, it's a pure DHT. It helps with the sex drive. Basically just a pure mild androgen. So I'm actually really interested in that one. Let's go to another one here. Speaking of D-Bol, this is a good question I got emailed in. And he says he's running D-Bol at 60 milligrams per day. And the only result he's seen in 3 weeks is back pumps. Hasn't gained any weight. Is it bunk? My gut instinct is, yeah, it's got to be bunk. because if I'm running D-ball at only 20 milligrams per day, I'm probably adding weight, you know, just based on water retention. Even if you're running an AI, D-ball is ridiculous. You know, you hear all the stories about Moonface and everything else. Without, you know, testing it, without getting blood work, is there any way to know? No. You know, we can't sit here and tell you, yeah, it's bunk or no, it's not. But I can tell you with, for me, personally, if I'm running 60 milligrams per day, after a week, I'd probably gain 3 to 4 pounds just in water. So if you haven't seen the scale move at all, to me, I'm going to say it's bunk. Steve, what do you think?
Some people are really poor responders when it comes to fitness or steroids and stuff. But yeah, I mean, on D-ball, if you're a week and a half in and you're not noticing your lifts are going up a little bit by then, you're not getting any water retention, you're not getting pumps. Like if you can run a mile while a week and a half or 2 weeks into D-ball, then something's wrong. You know, so it'd be a lot of coincidences to make that happen. So, yeah, I would say it was wrong. But like I said, blood work, just run blood work and see where your estrogen is. And you'll see an estrogen bump for sure. So it's very, very simple. So let's get into our next topic. We're going to talk about supplements and a little bit on PCT as well. So let's talk about this new product that N2BM came out with. And it's kind of a surprise that came out, and they added it. It used to have D-Spark. D-Spark was a very popular pre-workout. It was a non-stim pre-workout, and it gave you some awesome pumps. So Need to Build Muscle came out with another great supplement that has amino acids, gives you pumps, and has a little bit of caffeine in it. So it's got basically the trifecta. So let's go over the ingredients. It's got L-citrulline, beta-alanine, L-taurine, caffeine, not very much caffeine, 390 milligrams. It's not just a bunch of caffeine like in one bottle. And then, let's see here, theobromine, areogenesis, and ephedra V. Okay, not to be confused with ephedrine, ephedra V, which is a natural stimulant, but it's not like a harsh stimulant. So it actually does what stimulants do without the side effects. So it's a really clever addition it is. But let me talk a little bit about areogenesis, because I wrote about this one. And let me pull up here a little bit of information on it. And if this one sounds familiar, it is because it is also an ingredient that's an N2Burn, which is a fat burner that N2BM came out with. So what this one is, and I actually wrote the article, if you go to N2BM on it, and you know, the cool thing about this, it's probably the strongest thing, okay, that you could get short of the MMA, which is very dangerous. The MMA is that really nasty stim that a lot of guys were taking and having heart attacks and stuff. So this is the strongest but safest thing out there. And it's natural. It comes from an orchid species called Area. And it's going to help reduce appetite, boost mood, and decrease anxiety. So you're going to really feel good during your workout. You're not going to be hungry. You ever been working out toward the end of your workout? You're like, shit, I'm hungry. I want to go get a burrito from Chipotle. Well, on this one, you're not going to feel that way. You're going to be able to finish your workout. It's not going to fuck around with your blood sugar. So it's a really cool one. I'll let Matt talk about a couple of these other ingredients, but I wanted to also touch on ephedra V. So ephedrine alkaloid was banned by the FDA. So supplement companies have been searching for something that was still legal that could compare in strength and be safe at the same time. Again, that word safe, okay? We don't want to take pre-workouts and be up half the night because we can't sleep, okay? Ephedra V is also known as Green Mormon Tea, okay? So it's a thermogenic. It's going to help you burn calories while resting. So during your workout, it's going to turbocharge the calorie burn. It's going to give you a beneficial to your workout. It's going to give you a lot of energy, and it's also going to suppress your appetite during your workout. So you can just focus on your workout. Going to give you good, clean energy, and it's safe. It's not going to like keep you up all night like these other pre-workouts. So this is a really cool pre-workout, guys. You all know I hate pre-workouts. 99% of pre-workouts are bullshit. 99% of them are just bullshit because there's a bunch of stimulants. But this one is a clean pre-workout that actually is going to help you reach your fitness goals. So Matt, I'll let you talk about a couple of the other ingredients.
Yeah, you know what? I find this very interesting because it kind of came out of nowhere. But the first thing that caught my mind is the very first ingredient, citrulline malate, and the fact that it has 2 grams. Now, when pre-workouts were getting really, really popular, maybe 5-10 years ago, a lot of these products did start to incorporate citrulline malate, and they were putting in, you know, 1 to 2 grams, which is what this has, 2 grams, and that was good. Pumps were great. But what happened is supplement industry is extremely, extremely competitive, low profit margins, and, you know, these guys are fighting tooth and nail to make money. So what do? Well, it's a cheaper ingredient. They just add more, right? Next thing you know, you find pre-workouts out there now, 6 to 10 grams of this stuff. You don't need that at all. I promise you, if you don't want to buy the supplement, that's fine. Buy pure citrulline malate on its own. Get the powder and take 2 grams and work out and then take 5. Tell me if you notice a difference. You won't. You'll get the same kind of increased pumps. So I find that great that the dose is proper. Next thing is beta-alanine. One of the better things you can put in a pre-workout, and I think a lot of you guys are already aware of this, it does not function the same way as creatine does, but it has some similar aspects to it. What it does, it kind of buffers lactic acid. So the way that it's similar to creatine is it will help you push through those last, 1 to 2 reps. That are really, really important. We all know those last few reps are really important. And it's extremely good at that. Beta-alanine is also the one that we get a lot of posts on, which are funny, that say, hey guys, I took my pre-workout and my face and my hands were all tingly like pins and needles. Yes, it does cause that. No, it's not harmful at all. It does nothing negative to you. But a lot of you guys, including myself, we do get that side effect if we take beta-alanine. So it's just something you learn to kind of love or deal with, whatever. It's not a big deal. It's here and gone. Great ingredient. And the other one is caffeine. And sure, we all know about caffeine. We all know what it is. But I love the way it's dosed in the product because it's only dosed. It's under 400 milligrams. So it's almost that perfect number because if you're a guy that likes stimulants, that's a full dose for you. You go with a scoop and you train. For me, I'm a sensitive guy to caffeine. I don't want 400 milligrams of caffeine. A half scoop, more than enough for me. All of a sudden, I got this new product at a great price because I'm still getting 1 gram of citrulline. I'm still getting enough beta-alanine and I'm still getting more than enough caffeine with, it'd be 195 milligrams at that point. That's plenty. So it's something that's versatile. You can kind of use it, depending on if you're a stimulant guy or if you're not a big stimulant guy, So I think, those are the ingredients that stick out to me. But it's something when I saw this come out, I asked Steve about it. I said, hey, did you know about this? And he said, no, this is new to me too. So I said, fuck, well, I'm going to order a couple. There's good flavor. So, I'll let you guys know how it goes. I ordered 2 of the 3 flavors and I'm going to give it a try and see how I like it. I haven't used a pre-workout in, 5-6 years, to be honest. So I'm looking forward to giving it a try. I'll let you know.
So let's get into some diet topics now. We're speeding through this this podcast. We don't have much time left. So Matt, do you have any diet topics that were sent in? I have a couple. We only have time for maybe 3. So if you have one, go ahead.
Yeah, I got a really good one here for you, Steve, because a lot of the science behind food and all the research you've done on fasting and everything. And this guy's kind of playing on the mental aspect of food, and he just asks, why does fried chicken taste so good? And plug in any word for fried chicken. Plug in pizza, plug in wings, cake, whatever your thing is. Why do our minds tell us, this tastes so good, I want more?
So guys, it's not really the food. You ever like eat something and then like you're like, oh, this tastes so good, blah, blah, blah. Then after you eat it, you're like, wow, I feel like shit. Okay, so that's what happens when you eat this food. So your mind, you basically get this dopamine rush. You get this feel-good sensation. And, you know, once it's over, then reality strikes. You're put something in your body that is going to upset your stomach. And it's going to make you feel like shit, make you feel tired. So you get that initial little rush. So, we don't want to be like an anorexic person and put it in your mouth and chew it and spit it out. Because I've heard people do that. It's been on like shows and stuff or movies where guys will go to a restaurant with a steak. They'll cut the steak up, put it in their mouth, chew on it. They're like, oh, this tastes good. Then they'll spit it in their napkin. And the person's like, is you don't like the steak? I'm like, no, I'm just trying to, you know, not put on weight. So we don't have to go that far. But like realistically, guys, you want to just realize that it's just like anything. It's just like cheating on your wife. You know, it feels good to fuck this random girl that you met off whatever it's called. What's that app called? Whatever, Tinder or whatever. You find some chick off Tinder, you bag her, you know, and then your wife comes home from work. You know, you feel good when you're fucking that girl, but then afterwards you're like, fuck. You know, your wife comes home, hi honey, how was your day? And you feel like shit, you know? So it's the same thing with food. So it's that dopamine rush that you're enjoying, but it's not actually the food that you think is good. So, you know, if you're, like for me, like I don't even feel that, okay, anymore. If you get used to eating clean food, guys, you will not, that the just the smell of that type of food, that gut food will make you ill, will make you nauseous. Like, I don't even let people bring fast food in my house. I'm like, don't even bring that shit in my house because I don't want to smell it. That shit smells nasty to me. I don't want to smell it. And to them, it smells good because they're addicted to that dopamine rush. They're not addicted to actual food. So that is the reason.
No, that's great advice. I got another good one here on diet, and this one, there's a lot of ways you could go on it, but he said, what is the healthiest mayo? And I know when I'm in the grocery store and I'm going down the aisle and I see all the different salad dressings and mayos and everything, there's an olive oil mayo, there's an avocado mayo, there's a fat-free mayo, there's all these different ones. So he wants to know, what's the healthiest one? I will tell you, what you want to do is not use any of them. The best alternative to like a spread on a sandwich or something like that is just avocados on their own. You don't need anything else with them. If you get good avocados, organic avocados from the grocery store, and they're ripe, they're properly ripe, they should be really soft and easy to mush up. That's all you need to do. Put that on your food. You'll be amazed how good that is. And I found that out years ago. It's the best alternative to anything you could have. So I wouldn't use any mayos. If you look at the ingredients, you'd be surprised how much sugar is in there. You know, you think it's all mayo. It's just it's fat and it's eggs. No. Trust me, there's cups of sugar in those bottles. It's disgusting. So read the ingredients. That will be enough to turn you off. And try the avocado. Steve, I know you don't eat bread, so it's not gonna be something that you would use. But is there anything else you recommend, or have you ever tried just avocado? Like I said,
dude, I eat guacamole every day. I have it with my salad. I mean, comparing guacamole to salad dressing or mayonnaise or any type of condiment, it's not even close. You're getting something, you know, very good omega-3 fats. You know, very good, healthy, very very easy to digest. and it's clean. So you're not going to get fat off eating avocados. And a lot of guys out there have never even had an avocado, okay? Or they never even had guacamole. Guys, listen. Go on evolutionary.org, Google, okay? Actually, just go to Google, put in evolutionary.org guacamole recipe. And you'll pull up a recipe that I came up with where it costs like literally $4 or less to make your own fresh guacamole. And I'm telling you guys, this is going to be a lifesaver, okay? Whether you're bulking or cutting, it is extremely healthy to have this stuff. So check that out. Check out that article. And, you know, I have it almost every day. And I have it with my salads, and it's absolutely delicious. I've had people that never had guacamole before. They thought it was nasty. They actually tried putting guacamole in their salad or having guacamole with their eggs. Instead of getting bacon with their eggs, they swapped in guacamole with their eggs. It's delicious, and it's healthy. 100% more healthy than having sausage or bacon with your eggs. Try it, guys. You will definitely feel a difference when you have it. It's so energetic. It is so good for you. So let's do a couple weightlifting ones. Matt, we don't have much time left. Do you have another diet one you want to hit?
We can hit a quick one.
Yeah,
go ahead. If you want. Yeah, this one basically just says, what can I add to my black coffee besides milk for flavor? For me, I love black coffee. I've always had it that way for more than 10 years now. And I don't drink a lot of it, but I like the taste of it. To me, nothing. Don't add anything. Because coffee is similar to other things that are acquired. If you drink black coffee for a few days, you'll be used to it and you'll prefer it that way anyways. If you absolutely have to add something, I would say just add in a tiny, tiny bit of like a vanilla whey protein isolate, and that's going to be more than enough. But I don't think you need to add anything. Definitely stay away from the milks, the creams, the sugars, all those things, because all of a sudden then it's not a coffee, it's a dessert, you know, and that's not something you want. The calories can get loaded up really quick. So, Steve, I know you're not a big coffee guy. Is there anything else you can think of that I missed that somebody could add? Your microphone's broken again, Steve.
If I was to have, like, I'll have, you know, tea once in a while or something if I go out to a restaurant or something. I'm not into the whole tea coffee thing, guys. I'm not an advocate for it. I don't think it's healthy. In fact, I think that it's very detrimental. It's very harsh on your stomach, and there is not any health benefits. But if I were to have tea when I go out, I'll put stevia in it. You know, and that is a healthier way to kind of sweeten it up, or some lemon and stevia. It's delicious having tea, but to me it's a beverage. It's not something you drink that's healthy. I know a lot of people drink tea every day. Hey, do your thing, guys, but I'm not an advocate for it. So let's do some workout questions. This guy wants to know, how much sleep should I get during bulking training? That was his question. He's saying he has had sleep disorders since he was a kid, and he only gets 5 or 6 hours a night if he's lucky. So he wants to know what he should do. So I'm going to be honest with you. Some people can get away with less sleep. Some people cannot. It depends. The funny thing is, like, and this isn't funny, but it is interesting because you might know people like this. People who are like bipolar may only sleep 2, 3, 4 hours a night, or who have major ADHD. Okay. So those are the types of people that you'll see if you ever, you know, go out at night and something. You'll see these people out shopping at Walmart or whatever in the middle of the night. You're like, what the fuck are these people doing out? But they're out all the time because they literally do not sleep. Okay. They're lucky if they sleep 4 hours a night. So that's some type of mental disorder that causes someone to get away with doing that. But if you're a normal person and you want to excel at fitness, you need to get between 7 and 8 hours of good quality sleep a night. That is the time when our body is resting and repairing itself. So can you get results getting 4 or 5 hours or 6 hours like this guy? Yes. But will you get the optimal results? No. And eventually it will catch up to you because your body needs to rest and repair. And the only way it does it is from sleep. So again, you can Google evolutionary.org sleep. And you'll come up with an article that I wrote, once again, that will help you improve your sleep. A lot of you are doing things wrong when you sleep, and it's costing you. It's costing you being able to go to sleep. It's costing you from being able to stay asleep. Okay? So you really have to, you know, improve on that if you want to get your best sleep.
Guys, that's not a shameless plug. That article is one of the best articles, probably the best you'll find out there on sleep anywhere. When it comes to fitness and sleep and things you can do to improve it, you can learn a lot, so you need to read it. Even if you think you get good sleep, read it, because there's a lot of things you could do to make your sleep even better. What I would tell this guy is, you know, if you think you suffer from sleep disorders and things like that, you need to see a doctor, because they'll do sleep tests on you. And there's things you can do, you know, medically to improve that if you do have a medical issue. But that's not the case for most of us. Most of us, we don't sleep because, you know, we got our phones in our room, et cetera, we're watching TV, whatever. Our dogs are in our room. A million different reasons. And I think we need to start paying attention a lot more to our sleep. Everybody out there, we're all fucking worried about, oh, I got to get my 400 grams of protein in today, or I'm going to lose all my muscle. You know, I've worked 5 years. It's all going to fall off in one day if I don't, you know, eat another 4 chicken breasts today. But we don't think about our sleep at all. And really, that's the time we're growing. You know, when we're lifting, we're tearing shit apart. We need to sleep so we can repair and rest and grow. It's so important. And I think, you know, it's just something we need to kind of transition and switch and focus on as a bodybuilding culture, is the importance of sleep and rest. So I think mentally, let's just tell ourselves, yeah, this is important. So you know what? If you're getting 5 to 6 hours, you're not far off. You know, you're close. I would say, you know, for me, 6 to 8 is plenty. And it also depends on the point you're at in your life. If you've got really young kids, you know, you're not getting 6 or 8 hours straight. You're getting up every 2 hours. And you just adjust for that. And you know what? It's not optimal, but things change down the road and you get back to it. So definitely distinguish the two. If you need to have medical help, then do that to make sure. If not, read the article and make a lot of the changes that are suggested in the article. So I got a few good training ones here too.
Yeah. Let's hit one, Matt, because we're running out of time, and then we'll hit the others on the next show. This one flew by.
We'll get this one quick then. It says, for women, is Zumba better than weightlifting for fat loss? Just quickly then, for me, I think, is it better? No, I think it's great to do, because I think it's probably really hard. I'm not much of a dancer, guys, to be honest, but I know if I was doing it for a half hour, I'd probably burn a shitload of calories. I think ideally the best situation is both. You know, you fit both in. For me, I prefer weightlifting. I would just lift higher volume, lower rest periods. If I was really trying to cut, I wouldn't do more cardio, but that's just what I prefer. So you know what? For weight loss, I would say do whatever you enjoy. If you enjoy it more than weightlifting, do it. Because the real magic in fat loss happens with your diet. So as long as the diet's in check, as long as you're in that deficit, you know, 300, 400, 500 calories, 7 for me, if I'm cutting in a deficit, whatever exercise you're doing is icing on the cake. It's going to be that much better for your results. So that's kind of what I would say.
All right, guys. We appreciate you guys listening to the show, and we will talk to you next time. Keep the questions coming. Thank you.